Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Kick off your future with the law firm of Cundori & Murad, the official Grant & Danny show sponsor. They'll help protect your assets, update your will, and trust. Schedule a free estate planning strategy with one of their Fairfax-based attorneys. Visit KMLawyers.com. Mention the show. Get a discount. KMLawyers.com. Caller number 10 right now at 800-636-1067. Congratulations, you have won a four-pack of tickets to the UFL DC Defenders home opener. This is Sunday, 2 days away, April 7th, 4 p.m. They're taking on Houston, a couple of blocks from where we're sitting over at Audi Field. Tickets are on sale now. For tickets and more event information, go to thefandc.com. You've never been to a Defenders game still?
I have not, no.
Outstanding atmosphere. It's a blast. Everyone should go check it out. You have been to Audi Field?
Yes.
I think Audi Field's phenomenal.
It's so good.
Did you go for soccer?
I went for soccer. Then I went for like a food truck festival kind of thing. And I remember being there and being like, this. That was the first time I'd gone. Then I went for a soccer with a bunch of kids. I was like, this stadium, it's impossible to have a bad view, impossible to have a bad seat. It's intimate, but it still feels pretty big, like when you're in that bowl, if that makes any sense. It's really well done.
Yeah. I think Audi Field is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I've been to a couple of DC United games there and then plenty of Defenders games, and it's perfect for what is the old XFL, now the UFL.
Yep.
But you've got what is, you know, a 20,000-seat environment, right around 17,000-18,000 fans, hopefully, generally, for the Defenders, which is a really good thing. All right, let's get to our Beltway Blitz. We'll start you off on the diamond. Last night, Danny, the Nationals fell to 2-4. Josiah Gray, for the second time in as many starts, struggled immensely. The line for him was ugly. 4 1/3, 7 hits, 6 earned runs, and 3 walks. The problem for JoJo, twofold. One, he's not throwing enough strikes, getting ahead in enough counts. Two, I just think he's throwing too many pitches too often. He throws 7 pitches right now, which sounds like a good thing, but it tells me you don't really have your bread and butter going for you. If you're right. Using 7 in the first couple of innings, you might not have a couple of pitches to major on at that point.
Right. I mean, you know, all of a sudden a 3-pitch mix becomes devastating if you're 0-1, 1-2, 0-2 all the time in counts. If you're getting ahead early, now they've got to worry about everything. If you're, you know, behind 3-1 or 2-0, as it seems he is almost all the time, now you get yourself into trouble. And it's the ability to kind of bow up. I mean, think back to Gio Gonzalez for so many years, right? Where he'd flirt with danger, get runners on, go deep in the counts, then like make that big pitch. The big pitch hasn't happened so far for Josiah Gray, right? That second, you know, first and second, 2 outs, you know, 3-2 count, bow up and do something nasty, get the guy, and it hasn't happened.
Speaking of not happening yet, Lane Thomas, just 2-for-24 at the plate. Now, this is typical baseball is not that fun for you all the time stuff.
Yeah.
Lane Thomas is hitting the ball pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
I've watched 2 different games where he's hit 2 or 3 rockets.
It feels like a line out a game at least.
Nothing to show for it. He's hitting 083 with a 179 on base. He's going to snap out of it, but back-to-back years for the Nationals as their player of the year, and he's off to the worst start of anybody in the lineup, 2-for-his-first-24. But you know how this goes, Danny.
Yes.
I mean, when it rains, it's going to pour probably because he's been in some bad luck for the first week of the season.
2 weeks from now, that jam shot pop-up's going to fall in short right field. The line drives will carry over the fence. I am not worried about that dude at all. If we're still here in, I'm not 083, but if we're still doing this in June, where it doesn't have any counting stats and the average and the hard hit percentage, all these things are down low, we could have a conversation, but too much track record over the last couple of years for me to be worried.
As good as I feel about him getting right, I don't feel that way about the Nats. I mean, they are 2-4.
Mm-hmm.
This is about what you should expect. Now, frankly, they should be 3-3 because Kyle Finnegan blew a save when they had a ninth inning lead. They could easily be .500 right now through six games. They had a chance in both series to win the series in the finale and lost game three against both the Reds and the Pirates. So things could have gone a little differently in the early sample. But in the NL East right now, the Braves are the only team that has a winning record. The Phillies come to town with Bryce Harper, Trey Turner, Kyle Schwarber, and every other former National that you've ever liked tonight at Nats Park. They're 2-4 also.
Mm-hmm.
The Mets won yesterday, come from behind style when they were trailing.
It's their first win.
They're 1-5. The Marlins are the first team in the history of Major League Baseball to make the playoffs one year and to go 0-8 to start the following season. They have lost all eight of the games they've played. NL East is off to a really bad start.
It certainly is, and I don't think anybody expects it to stay that way. Now, the Marlins are not as good as they were last year. I think the Mets are going to be, you know, middling, you know, mid-70s win team, I think, regardless of how they started. Philadelphia is going to get going. You know that. The Braves, I think, are one of the two or three best teams in baseball. So, yeah, work cut out for you. And it's never easy to see all of your former pals storm back into the ballpark. Franchises in very different positions.
I always like going and seeing the Phillies in town just to see each year that we get further removed.
Some old friends.
Bryce Harper still gets booed. I think it's lessened some each year, but there's still the folks that are just always going to give him a hard time. Pitching matchup tonight, Aaron Nola for the Phillies got knocked around in his first start. Patrick Corbin for the Nationals, who's sporting an ERA over 8 after one outing this season, looking to get deep into the game for the Nats. All right, let's keep the Beltway Blitz moving. On the ice last night, the Washington Capitals lost the biggest game of their year against the Pittsburgh Penguins. Damn Penguins. 4-1 winners. I'm doubly mad today, Danny.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, the Capitals kicked themselves in the shin with ice skates on. That's very painful.
Sounds awful.
May have even drawn blood. Their chances of making the playoffs got a lot worse last night. In fact, statistically, I could tell you, they went from over 50% likely to about 37% likely via moneypuck.com with that loss. Here's what's more angering. The Penguins are right back in the thick of things.
Yep.
They were dead in the water a week ago. If the Caps beat them last night, they were all but eliminated. Now they're 1 point back of Washington. They are still very much alive. So that was the double whammy last night.
It wasn't that long ago. Matter of, I don't know, 14 days. They'd won 6 of 7, talking about your local Washington Capitals organization. Now, all of a sudden, they lost 4 straight, managed an overtime point in there. Now, you played some quality opponents. You did. Toronto's excellent. They match up terribly with Toronto. That's the deal. I never want to see Toronto again, et cetera. But, man, getting the doors blown off by the Sabres and then Penguins afterwards, combined 10-3 score over those two games. That's deflating, man. That really, really hurts, especially because they put themselves in a position to have their games matter again, right? After their god-awful January, whatever that streak was, to start, you know, kind of the end of the month of January, I think they lost 7 straight, including, like, you know, 1 in overtime, to be able to get themselves into this position where they probably shouldn't be with the kids and this mixture of guys. It's not Backstrom. It's not Kuznetsov. It's not Oshie. It's, you know, a bunch of guys that were in the AHL in November and even earlier. To be able to sort of be there was great. But this may be kind of the downside. It was a razor-thin margin they were getting by with, and some of it's kind of regressed a little bit in a negative way.
Yeah, the Caps have been either in the playoffs via one of the spots or based on games in hand, like very likely to get in for the last couple of weeks, to your point. And today you wake up and they're on the outside looking in, surpassed by the Islanders for the last wild card spot. So the Islanders, who have gotten their act together, won 3 in a row, 6 points, out of a possible 6 over those 3 games, they are now surging up to 83 points, the 8th spot. The Capitals have 82, the 9th spot, but they're tied with the Red Wings, the 10th spot, and only 1 point ahead of the Penguins, the 11th spot, when 8 get in. They're still chasing the Flyers for 3rd in the Metro as well, and they're only 1 point back with a game in hand. So it is still very possible that they could be playing to get in, surpassing the Islanders and Flyers in like a get-in game. on the final game of the season. They're in Philadelphia to play the Flyers for that last game of the year. That could be huge.
It could be. But they got to handle their business. I mean, you know, when you guys doing the Altcast last night, and I do want to talk about that, by the way. I really enjoyed an awful lot of that that I was able to see. We're talking about something I thought was a great point. We're looking at the out-of-town scoreboard. Well, like, you know, this team didn't do any favors, or this team was winning, or this team maybe gave you a chance. And the salient point comes up. None of that matters if you don't handle some of your business.
Yeah, just do something.
Right? Like, it's good to get help when you tie against Boston. You go, okay, that's not a big, or go to overtime and lose against Boston. You get a point out of that. Now you can look at the out-of-town scoreboard for some help. When you're getting beat by Buffalo 6-2, it doesn't matter what anybody else does. If you can't get right at all, they can play all the games they want to.
Yeah, if they got into the playoffs, to your point, Danny, because they're string some wins together down the stretch, that's a massive accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
But if they were to somehow get in just because the Flyers and the Red Wings and the Islanders
imploded,
collapse,
yeah,
and they win a couple of games from here on out, it's not going to feel the same, and it shouldn't. That's less an accomplishment, right? A very, very big game tonight for the Capitals against the Hurricanes, and I got to tell you, I don't love this one on paper. You got a Carolina team that's better than you. You've got a Caps team on the second night of a back-to-back on the road, traveling. On top of that, Lindgren has played 11 straight games in 17 of 18. So now there's huge question as to who's in net. Is it Darcy Kemper's night? Is he healthy enough to play? You've had Hunter Shepherd traveling with the team because he's been banged up. I think there are real questions about who's going to be between the pipes. If it's Kemper, it's been a long time since he's played a really good game. And man, are the Hurricanes a better team now after trading for not only Kuznetsov, but
Gensel.
Jake Gensel
as well.
Who I hate
so much.
So there's just so much about this game tonight that doesn't look great. And you now have to win. If they lose, if they don't get any points tonight, they might be cooked. If they get one, they give themselves
heartbeat,
a shot.
Maybe. Yeah.
If they get two, they're probably in really good shape again. So it's just so big. And it doesn't bode well.
Yeah, and on paper, it doesn't look good.
All right, let's round out the blitz. To talk football, we've got our guy Mitch Tischler of the Monumental Sports Network. Mitch, we had Austin Eckler on a little bit ago. He's awesome. What do you expect from him out of the backfield this year?
I expect a similar role to kind of what we saw from Antonio Gibson, except maybe be a little bit more involved on first and second downs early on. He's a guy that can be a young quarterback's best friend because he can catch the ball and he knows how to make guys miss. And I think most importantly for this group, he's a guy who knows how to get in the end zone, because that's not something that we see a ton from the running backs over the past couple of years. So I'm certainly excited for that.
Mitch, what do you think of Jahan Dotson? Are we in line for, you know, a post-Bienemy Howell kind of renaissance, kind of more of what we saw his rookie year, or do they need a receiver?
Can I say both? Because I think you are in line for a little bit of a renaissance where he should see the ball a little bit more and hopefully find himself a little bit more open. But I also think you need another receiver. You need a kind of Curtis Samuel type guy who can be a little bit of a gadget and move him around and get him open. But, you know, what you see a lot of out of these Cliff Kingsbury offenses is his want to spread the ball sideline to sideline and end zone to end zone. And so you're going to see kind of a bunch of quick passes out of this offense. And Jahan Dotson is a guy that I want to see get the ball in space because he has, you know, so much quickness and speed. And I think that's something that they can really show off a little bit more than we've seen from him. So I expect that we're going to see a better season this year. I think he's going to take a pretty big step forward and be kind of solidify his, kind of number two role per se. But at the same time, I want to see a little more speed, a little more athleticism about whoever's going to be that kind of slot receiver, because as much as I love Jamison Crowder and some of the other, you know, guys on this roster, I don't know that they really are kind of starting NFL caliber wide receiver type players. And certainly that's something that I'd like to see them address in the middle rounds.
Mitch, who do you want them to take at number two, and who do you think they're going to take at number two?
I've been pretty steadfast on this from the beginning. I like Jaden Daniels a lot. I think he's the guy that they're going to ultimately take. To me, when I look at, I think they both Jaden and Drake May have big upsides, and I wouldn't be unhappy with either of them. But when I look at what each needs to correct as a quarterback as they move onto the NFL level, I think with Jaden, it's about kind of reading the whole field and making more plays over the middle. My problem with Drake is a little bit of the inaccuracy and bad footwork that we see in the pocket. And for me, the inaccuracies and footwork are tied together and are a tougher thing to fix, because that's kind of who he is as a quarterback, Drake May. And as you look at Jaden Daniels, I think, you know, you can teach a quarterback to spend more time in the pocket and read the field and throw the ball over the middle. And oh, by the way, in the meantime, you have the elite athleticism if he has to escape the pocket to get out and make plays on the outside.
Mitch Tischler, Monumental Sports Network. I'll sneak in one more on Jaden Daniels. Do you, like, all the stuff that people like me are worried about analytically with pressure to sack and, you know, not throwing to the middle of the field, do you worry about that at all, or do you think that the tape's the tape? He was great in the SEC. He'll figure it out.
Well, certainly anyone who dismisses that is, I think, blinding themselves. I think if there are advanced analytics that you can look at that are positive for Drake and negative for Jaden, and vice versa, positives for Jaden and negatives for Drake. Yes, his pressure to sack ratio wasn't great. But also, you have to look at kind of how those plays came about, because there are a number of them where he's escaping out of the pocket and either taking a sack or throwing the ball away so he doesn't turn the ball over. So, listen, I think that there's a lot to take from it, and you certainly have to consider all of those facts. To me, I think that his athleticism will transfer from the college level to the NFL level a lot easier than Drake Mays will. And ultimately, to me, while you're trying to fix some of those deficiencies of the quarterback, he has that one elite trait that you can rely on, at least early on in his career, and watch him grow into, you know, kind of the NFL quarterback that he can become. He's not Lamar Jackson by any means, but you can look at kind of the trajectory of Lamar's career, where early on in his career, he was running the ball a lot more, and they were calling design quarterback runs a lot more because they were waiting for him to kind of develop into the pocket passer that you're starting to see a little bit now. And I think that you can look at Jaden when you have that one elite trait, you can rely on that early on in their career and hopefully watch them grow into becoming a more traditional NFL quarterback.
Mitch, thank you, buddy. Have a great weekend.
Hey, thanks so much. Real quick, before I go, Grant,
yes.
Congratulations last night on the Caps Altcast. I watched a fair amount of it. That was a ton of fun. You guys killed it. Your interview with Tress was so fun.
Dude, how good was Tress?
You, Bruce, and Tress is incredible all the time. But you, Bruce, and Tarek kind of just sitting around, you know, BSing about hockey and telling old funny stories. That was so much fun to watch, especially as the game wasn't going, you know, the best way for the Caps. So
yeah, we could have gone for a different first game, I'd say. Ordered up a couple more
nice.
Goals. No, I appreciate you saying that. I hope it translated, but we really had a hell of a good time doing that. It was fun.
I can't wait to watch you guys do that through the last couple regular season games and wins and on into the playoffs. That was great.
Appreciate you, man. Yeah, got to get one tonight. Our guy, Mitch Tischler of Monumental. Thank you, buddy. And yeah, it was a good time. I mean, it's hard to sit next to Bruce Boudreau and Tarek watching hockey and not have fun.
Right.
Like, Bruce is the most, he's just so funny. The hardest thing, I think, for him is not cursing, because he's a hockey coach. And I don't know if you've heard a thing or two about hockey coaches, Danny. They like to mix it up a little bit with the language.
Rubbing some elbows and slinging some four-letter words.
So he catches himself out and then right before he says something. But he's very, very funny. And we really did. It was a good time. In fact, JP from Middays with B. Mitch and Finley is going to have a Tuesday night altcast for the Wizards, I believe, is their debut. And Steve Buckantz is involved
in that.
That's
awesome.
Which I'm so fired up about. And then our next one's going to be next Thursday. So I'm hoping, fingers crossed, Caps win tonight. They're still very much in the mix. And that Thursday's rematch with the Sabres is a big one.
Be more fun, yeah.
It would certainly change the algorithm a little bit.
Wouldn't it all be up?
G&D on the Fan next. What excites you the most about the possibility of these QBs at 2? With Danny, I'm Grant. This is The Fan. At 5 o'clock and a half hour, the G&D's Tony's Mailbag. A Friday staple on this radio program. 6 o'clock, we'll keep our running back theme going. We had Austin Eckler earlier today. Cameron Harris, starting running back for the D.C. Defenders. Sunday, 4 o'clock, first home game of the year, game number 2. They lost their opener. They're looking to get back to .500 and keep their undefeated streak at Audi Field alive with 2 years of pro football having been played in the venue. Yesterday, Danny, fill in the blank for me, because I was driving across D.C. In the rain trying to get set up during a rain delay when we went back on the air by surprise.
that's a good summary, actually. That's how it went.
But I think you, based on what I gathered when I joined you, were asking people, what's your biggest fear as it pertains to drafting a quarterback?
Who scares you? In other words, the... that, you know, how reasonable can you see a disaster? And my answer, I think, was a little bit weird. Darius and I actually had the same thought process. The guy that I'm most excited about in Washington's range is Jaden Daniels, because I think he has an incredible upside and it's amazing. I'm also terrified. Terrified to the point that I'm going to be white knuckling it every time he drops back. Is this the Haloti Ngata play? Is this the time that he gets crunched like Sam Howell did against Arizona?
Oh, that's your big concern is him staying healthy.
100%. Even though he was healthy his college career, but just someone that slight who runs that well, who's taken so many shots, that's the thing that scares me.
Do you have any red flag football stuff concerns?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean,
but more so the size.
Yeah, the wrinkles that I think everybody, I don't think anybody's perfectly clean coming out at this point.
But his balance sheet is like the bigger predictors. That's kind of where I get nervous with him. But the flip side of that is what excites you the most. So that could be just a player. That could be part of a skill set. About the possibilities at number two. I actually want to give one for both guys if I can. So twofold for me. What excites me the most about, let's say, Jaden Daniels at number two is the possibility of having the quarterback that can break your back with the running. Electricity of Lamar Jackson. We've never had that other than a very small window for about 6 weeks when Robert Griffin started to run the ball. Remember the big 80-yard run almost against the
Minnesota
Vikings?
Yeah.
Like that short-lived time where you're accounting for him. And that season, obviously, it was 11-on-11, meaning he was operating in read option. So you had to defend him. And instead of 11-on-10, which is normally what you play defensively, because the quarterback stands in the pocket to throw, now it's 11-on-11 because the quarterback can leave the pocket at any point. That's what Jaden Daniels provides. So I think in an era where we're trending toward needing to be athletic and mobile, most quarterbacks that get drafted in the first round are going to be. But also the bonus of having a guy who can actually be a running quarterback, different than an athlete, but someone who can do some of the Justin Fields, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen stuff. I want to design some keepers. I want to have some nakeds and boots. I want to move the pocket. I want a defense to have to account for Jaden Daniels every snap, every second of every play, every game long. That excites me. From a Drake May standpoint, what excites me about him is me closing my eyes and seeing a ceiling where he's got some Josh Allen and some Justin Herbert, and you got a top 10, top 7 quarterback in the NFL who's a big-bodied guy, who's a physical presence, who stands in the pocket, who makes big-time throws, and who is effective at slinging the football as a franchise passer. Just the potential, right? The A version of him. If he maxes out what he can become, to me, that's what would excite me about Drake May.
Excitement for me, I remember Mike Rizzo years ago talking to us about Trey Turner as he was starting to play really well for the Nationals as a young player. He said something really interesting. He's a great baseball player who happens to run fast, as opposed to someone like Billy Hamilton who runs incredibly fast and is trying to be a good baseball player. Jaden Daniels, to me, what excites me the most is he's a quarterback who has all the throwing and all the potential to be a really good passer who can also run. It's not a running quarterback. He's not Vince Young. He's not running the triple option or something like that. He can also break your back in another way. That playmaking gene is the thing that excites me the most about Jaden Daniels. To me, I think we sometimes overcomplicate it when it comes to football and winning week to week. To me, games all the time come down to that 4th-and-11 on with a minute left and no timeouts. Can you pull something out of your tuchus? Right? When it's 72 and sunny, which it is a lot of plays because the way these rules are and everything else, there are 30-some guys on any given play that can drop back, pat the football once, find an open receiver for a positive gain. That's fine. To me, the separation is, can you not only take something where the defense has the advantage, where they've got you pinned down, dead to rights, whatever, and turn it not only into positive, but as you said, a back-breaking type play. The guy that everybody in the whole league is jealous of and now wants to copy. That's what excites me the most about Jaden Daniels. For Drake May, what excites me the most, and there are a couple things that are exciting about a number of these prospects, but I'll do May specifically, it's that I think we've only begun to scratch the surface. He had frankly, a poor cast around him. Still put up some pretty solid seasons here over the past couple years, and this is the starter kit for what a superstar quarterback at the next level looks like. They just don't make that many people that are that big, that strong, that athletic, that powerful, who can throw the ball the way that he does easily. It's not a, I got a crow hop to spin it down the field or fit it into that small space, 25, 30, 40 yards on the opposite hash mark. No, no, no. This is an easy, effortless kind of gas that he has as a thrower. That's what excites me about him.
I would throw J.J. McCarthy in just for the exercise, and I would say what would excite me about McCarthy is I'm basing this on other people's opinions, both that I've talked to and then just like the rest of you as a consumer of content this time of year. I perceive J.J. McCarthy to be a all-world intangibles guy. Mental makeup, conscientiousness, the type of guy that is going to get there at 5:30 in the morning and bring donuts and coffee and leave at 7:45 p.m., turning out the lights and telling the janitor, have a great night, sir. You know, that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
That's supposedly the book on McCarthy. So we can quibble over why wasn't more put on his plate.
Mm-hmm.
How much is he going to be able to do from an athletic standpoint? Or what throws can't he in and will he and won't he make? But supposedly, and I think the proof's in the pudding, the last couple of months, as you have seen him go from start of the college season, he could get drafted in the second, third round to midway through the college season. Oh, he's definitely a second round pick. End of the college season. I could see him going in the early second, late first to now. J.J. McCarthy's going in the top five or top 10. Teams are spending time around him. They're interviewing him.
Mm-hmm.
He's got that all-American boy, high EQ, they call it. That's social intelligence, right? He can sit in a room with his buddies in college, and he'll be fine. He's a good hang. He could sit in a room with their parents, and they all love the kid. He can go into the, you know, at the cafeteria, he'll sit with the jocks and the goths and like all the different groups.
Right.
And they're all like, oh, hey, JJ, how you doing? I think he's got some of that. And I think that's important.
That there is something to say for that. Here's what actually legitimately excites me about him. He went through Jim Harbaugh. Like, you are coached hard.
He survived
by
the
Harbaugh
that guy. Boot camp.
And Harbaugh comes out on the other side going, I think he's the best quarterback in the country. I mean, you had a funny way of showing it, Jim, but that's the deal. Like, you went through that. You had an unbelievable time knowing and seeing firsthand what it took to win at an incredibly high level. You weren't handed much, right? You grinded. You won. Again, at the helm of a pro-style system at, you know, the highest levels of football. He has a winning pedigree, and he went through the kind of the Harbaugh boot camp. That's exciting to me.
Let's hear from you guys next. MGM National Harbor listener lines will open them wide up. 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Yesterday, you talked about some of your fears as it pertains to drafting QBs at number two. What would excite you the most? What are you the most fired up about as Washington prepares to draft a QB? You're listening to The Fan.
Most would be J.J. McCarthy just being drafted on name alone. That's what would terrify me.
Appreciate you.
Thank you, dude.
Man, we'll disagree on it, name alone. But, yeah, I think that the number of options, it's a great point. You're sitting at two, and it feels like...
It's a rich class.
They make a pick on draft night, it's going to be hard to be angry about it. If they go one of the three ways at QB that seem like it would make sense... Honestly, like, this isn't a thing because no one suggested it and there's no smoke. But, like, would you really be livid if they went with Michael Penix or something? You know, my point is not that you got to do that at two, but you just got a great college quarterback who's got a chance to be pretty good in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that a whole bunch where my thesis is at the end of this draft, when it's done, you've got your young franchise quarterback that you've drafted, you get your 5 years. You have a chance to build something. Every time you don't do that, when you don't have a quarterback, is a waste of time. This is a marketplace that's not like most, where you got a guy going 1-1 and the next quarterback won't go until, you know, I don't know, where Malik Willis went round three a couple of years ago, or Will Levis went or whatever. It's not like that. This is a bunch of first-round guys with, you know, different strengths, different weaknesses, different pedigrees. If you are to stockpile for the future, add a bunch of draft assets, multiple first-round picks over the years, and you come out of it at say, pick 12 with Michael Penix and an extra first rounder next year and a second this year and all these kinds of bits of ammo, I think a lot of people would be excited.
Let's go to Dave in Woodbridge on the Fan. Hey, Dave.
Hey, guys. So I'm excited in general that we may finally have a franchise quarterback. It's been so long. I feel like it's been since Stiles.
It has been.
You know, since Rippon had his little stint. But so the top four guys you're talking about may go within the top five picks. Notwithstanding the 83 draft, two of these guys out of the four are going to be a bust. That's what scares me. Which guys are going to fail miserably? You know, we've had the years where we pick guys in mid to late rounds, whether it's Ramsey or Campbell. Was it because of their talent or was it because of what was around them? We don't know. I'm just super nervous that we picked the wrong guy. And I don't have the answer of who the right guy is. You know, that's
nobody does. It's a crapshoot. We actually talked about yesterday, if you have the Odyssey app, go back and rewind, or you can grab the podcast at thefandc.com. But we referenced a piece by Bill Barnwell in the 2 o'clock hour yesterday, where he wrote about how more teams take quarterbacks early than ever before, but the hit rate hasn't changed. And so, if so facto, you know, more teams are wrong early on quarterbacks than have ever been. And it's just because you're getting more drafted and the same number are good. And therein lies the fear. And totally, I get that. But you got to walk out on the dance floor to dance with somebody. You got to ask to go to prom to have a date. And there's going to be fear that she's going to say no, kick rocks. But you're either going stag or you're risking getting embarrassed.
No question.
Let's go to Jared in Arlington. Hey, Jared.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, man.
I'm so excited about this draft. First and foremost, we have a real general manager to do that. That's number one. Number two, I'm excited about Jaden Daniels. You know, he's very calm and, you know, the way he's crumbled and everything, even though I'm a little bit worried about his weight. But one thing I want to touch on and hang up for the other listeners, I'm very high on the numbers, just like Grant, you know, the jersey numbers that they give out. So if you notice yesterday, they didn't give out number 10. The kicker who we signed, he always wore number 10. Do you think that gives you some kind of hint that they're going to go after me? Thanks for taking my
call.
Oh, conspiracy theory.
A little bit.
Can I get the X-Files song, please, Darius? So what he's saying is yesterday the Commanders came out and they released all of the new numbers for all the players.
Uh-huh.
All right. What number did Jaden Daniels wear in college?
Oh, I have no idea. Five?
I've seen 6,000 pictures. So that's Tress Way's number. That's taken. It's number five. I should have asked him about that on the Altcast last night. Is he going to sell him the number?
Yeah, I would love to know from Tressler, what would your price be? Like, in other words, here comes the rookie or whoever, you know, bonus baby, second overall pick. You want my jersey number, what's it going to cost you?
So Brandon McManus, he's saying, has always worn 10, and they gave him number 3 as their kicker. But he's claiming, possibly, that something's afoot here in that the number 10 has been kept available, and that's the number Drake May is going to want.
Man.
Danny?
I will tell you this. The McManus changing numbers is fascinating.
I see McManus wearing 8 in Denver in pictures I'm looking at.
So there's a chance he's one of those I don't care what my number is guys, which is very rare in sports.
He wore 10 in Jacksonville.
Hmm.
So maybe he changes his number every time. Did you see Kirk Cousins? Didn't keep his number 8. He went to 18. And I guess it sounds like he would have had to buy out all of the Kyle Pitts jerseys in circulation. And so he's like, nah, I'm good.
That's fine.
Like, I've only made a couple hundred mil. I'm good.
I'll let my money work for me, not for someone else.
And put it in the market. Let it go to work. Love that. G&D on the Fan. Next, Grant and Danny's Tony's Mailbag. A never before done segment in the history of radio before we came up with it. You call us and ask us anything. It is our mailbag once a week opportunity for you guys to ask whatever you'd like. We get complaints. You guys don't talk enough about this. Why aren't you talking about this team or this story in the news? Here's your chance to get us to talk about it. The Grant and Danny's Tony's mailbag.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.